You know him by his white beard, red hat, and the bells on his sleigh. He's a beloved fixture of popular culture, bursting onto the scene each December in movies, storefronts, family photos, and even parades. The man, the myth, the legend is Santa Claus. A myth and legend, however, based on a real figure. I say that lightly, of course. The picture materializing in your mind when I say Santa Claus is really a composite character that has been in a continual state of development over the last 1700 years. There is a foundational story, though, as all great legends have. This one takes place in the 4th century in a small town in what is now Turkey. Here, a benevolent bishop named Nicholas handed out treats and coins to children, oftentimes left in their shoes at night. The story could have ended here, stored in obscure history texts read only by scholars. But instead, the story of Nicholas developed and changed over time, and in each region the story was told. For the sake of time, we'll skip over the next 1300 years or so to a pivotal moment in the development of the story we know today. In 1773, a New York City newspaper took the Dutch myth of a serious man with a serious white beard who traveled by a serious white horse from house to house on a cold December night. A man who went by the name of Sinterklaas, and instead called him Santa Claus. More traditions were added over time, and by the 19th century, Santa, once a character with humble origins as a small town bishop, became a globe-trotting elf delivering presents by means of a sleigh pulled by 8 reindeer. Now, this is where things get a bit interesting. Not from a socio-cultural perspective, but from a logistics perspective. There is something innate in our modern era that makes us want to take a myth and pick it apart, looking for the problems or impossibilities inherent in the story. But then there are some who instead look for how it could, in fact, actually happen.
This is Connection, a podcast that brings you stories and expert opinions from the front lines of the workplace, enabling listeners to reimagine the worlds of employee and customer engagement.
You've probably seen the articles posted nearly every holiday season showing how Santa could or could not make his deliveries. My favorite is a 2018 article from Forbes. I'll include it in the show notes for reference. It said that Santa would need to spend less than 150 microseconds at each of 500 million households. He would need to move at roughly 1,300 miles per second, that's roughly 1% the speed of light, and accelerate at about 1.5 billion Gs to get from point to point on time. At roughly 4.5 pounds of presents per household, his sled cargo would amount to something like 4,000 times the payload capacity of the largest aircraft on Earth. For reference, that's the behemoth Antonov An-255. Let's slow down for a second and talk instead about scale, specifically the scale behind the logistics. Imagine a world in which the role of Santa exists in the frozen, inhospitable land of the North Pole. How would a regional bishop increase delivery from candies and coins dropped off to the children of a small Anatolian town to over 1 million metric tons delivered globally in a single night? And would the complications also be exaggerated because of not only the logistics involved with quantity and delivery, but specifically because of the global aspect?
Adam Plumpton. I currently work at Carbon. We're here in the Bay Area in Redwood City, and we engineer and produce 3D printing solutions, both the resins, the chemicals that get consumed in the process, as well as the hardware to do 3D printing. Before Carbon, I've worked at Tesla, I've worked at Hewlett-Packard, I've worked at Cisco, and I even worked in the Navy on nuclear submarines before all that.
Adam leads the supply chain organization at Carbon. In his role, he manages the entire value chain. This includes everything from sourcing parts and materials to shipping finished products and even servicing after the fact. I enlisted Adam to help me understand the complexity involved with a global supply chain.
Maybe I go to UPS or FedEx or the post office and I go print out my label and I drop it off somewhere and it's gone. If you think about moving big, heavy things or something that's a little bulkier than what you're going to put in a mailer or an envelope, it's probably going to go on a ship. It's probably going to go from you to some warehouse where it gets consolidated on a truck, and then it's got to get loaded from that truck into a shipping container that you might see on a ship, sailing from Oakland out of the bay. That ship may be the one that takes it all the way to the destination at whatever port it's going to in France, or maybe it goes someplace where it gets unloaded and cross-docked to another ship and you know, move through a port facility and taken on a smaller ship to its destination, France, in which case it then gets off at the port and gets moved to a warehouse and gets taken out of that container and gets put in a truck and goes to a warehouse and then gets delivered to a storefront somewhere if it's a consumer type product. I mean, the number of touches in that chain is tremendous. And that's just the physical flows. Think about the information, the compliance, the customs and trade. It's wildly complicated.
I asked Adam about the challenges that businesses face when they scale from a regional or even national level to a global scale. Here's what he said.
I mean, the number of things you have to think about is kind of, it's shocking once you start to get into it. There's things that are probably, once you say them, folks are more aware of, particularly given the news today, like trade and customs. And even that, how you value the product is subject to regulatory rules that are different by country. So if you have your thing that you're selling, the way France interprets what that value is or wants you to interpret what that value is, which is the basis that they'll use to apply duties and taxes in France, is different than Brazil, is different than China, is different than Japan, as examples. The compliance requirements, depending on what the goods are, might be different in all those countries. You need to have the physical distribution network that I kind of spoke about of how you get it from here to there. You have to have the goods available in country so that you know you can offer them and get them to your customers. You're going to have to deal with returns when something goes wrong. And so you're going to have to reverse supply chains, or you're going to kind of lose the material in country. You're going to need to service the product if it's something that requires service. That may require you to have staff in those countries, which may require you to set up legal entities and have HR source, you know, people in those countries and understand those local labor laws. And oh, by the way, it's France, so there's going to be different union requirements than there are here. It just goes on and on and on. So it's not trivial, to say the least. So I think that there's a leap to go global, but making that leap doesn't mean that once you've done it for one country, then you're good to go for everywhere else. It's a set of competencies and muscles that you need to have, but they are very specific country to country to country.
The global equation is challenging for more than just those delivering finished goods to customers or importing raw materials. It also impacts the way we get the job done that supports the importation and exportation of goods. The teams managing the IT infrastructure of a business are adapting to an ever-expanding global workplace. The same complexity multiplier. Another way of showing this or seeing this play out is through a fractal. If you've ever wandered through a grocery store, you might have seen a head of Romanesco broccoli. This is, for me, one of the most surreal of all foods. It's alien in almost every way. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you should look it up online right away. The color is a rich chartreuse, and its form is strangely, almost eerily geometric. Each bud is composed of smaller buds, which are composed of even smaller buds still. It is a self-similar pattern that continues at the smallest levels. Even the number of spirals that protrude grow in relation to the Fibonacci sequence. A fractal, like those found in Romanesco broccoli, is a never-ending complex pattern that replicates as it scales. It's formed by repeating a simple process over and over in a never-ending loop. As an object grows, the same pattern is repeated again and again. The scale increases, as does the complexity involved, and they are everywhere in nature. The patterns in leaves, trees, riverbeds, blood vessels, and even business, especially when complexity is scaled.
My name is Jeff Smits, and I work at RingCentral.
Jeff is the VP of IT infrastructure and operations at RingCentral. I spent time with Jeff discussing the significance of the transition from on-premise to cloud, especially when managing infrastructure for a global organization.
In this particular country, there were restrictions around U.S. technology coming in with any type of triple-DES encryption technology, and so they basically blocked it for a while there as well. So there's always going to be some countries that don't play ball. So just because you have a global standard, and if you have a global PBX standard, if you have a global tech standard, it's going to be, you know, hit and miss on which countries allow you to move equipment in and out. And so setting up an office or just dealing with company growth or rapid expansion of a company required a lot of planning. You had to really have a finger on the business growth and what the needs were. And sometimes if you're implementing global standards, that equipment wasn't even available to purchase in country. And so if you couldn't buy equipment in country, you had to ship it in. And, you know, shipping equipment in means clearing it through customs.
Often what stands out in these conversations is what falls just below the surface. Something as simple as buying or shipping equipment is never just buying or shipping equipment. Let's say you're moving to an office in, say, Spain. What complexities fall below the surface that need to be addressed? Here's Jeff.
Particularly in the days when you didn't have a true VoIP option, everything was analog. A lot of offices had its own proprietary on-premise PBX, and you had a lot of analog lines coming in to support the office. You had to predict if they had a call center or IVR. You had to predict how many ports they would need. And there was no flexibility. If you were approaching capacity and you were going to run out of ports, you had to really predict far in advance and get circuits ordered. And these analog circuits oftentimes had many, many months lead time, sometimes up to 6 months lead time. But even in the US, it would have at least, you know, 3 to 6 weeks lead time. And to get the number of ports that you needed, it means dealing with a global warranty and dealing with the whole complexity of title transfer. So you're transferring title from one legal entity to another legal entity. And there are tax implications when you do that title transfer. So then you have to pay taxes, not only bringing it across, oftentimes paying VAT, but you also have to deal with the tax implications of the asset or the equipment being purchased on foreign soil. And then you have to deal with the warranty complexities. So sometimes vendors don't even cover the equipment once you send it to a new country. So then you have to figure out, well, who's actually going to service this equipment? And then you have to locate, you know, certified, you know, technicians that can actually come in and service equipment should you not have the right engineers or technicians available on premise. Well, you have to think about your objectives when you're implementing telephony when in any country. And if we were doing Spain and we're a US company, one is you want the Spain office to be productive. You want them to be able to communicate with their customers. You want them to be able to communicate with the rest of the company. And then on the other side, you want the rest of the company to be able to reach out and communicate with Spain. There may be a global role that they play, and there needs to be some way to reach Spain from all of these other locations. So you have to come up with your business plan for how Spain is going to fit into the rest of the company. And once you establish that business plan, then you have to think about what kind of dial plan, what type of routing, what type of IVR strategy you need to put in place in order to support all of those functions. But one of the other things, and probably one of the more visible things to management, is the cost of operation. And so you want to minimize the international costs of doing business with that entity and having Spain operate effectively with the rest of the company. You want to drive costs down as much as possible and try to create some level of synergy with the company. You need to manage long distance fees and internet costs. And so locally, if you can minimize the amount of hard dependencies you have on analog circuits and, you know, just sort of lay in a basic framework for internet like you can with cloud services, you get away from having to manage all of these dependencies of lead time predictions.
As we talked, an additional layer of complexity began to emerge. It was in the area of regulations. Earlier, Jeff brought up the complexity of simply moving a warranty. I asked more about how regulatory requirements influence IT teams as they expand into new global markets.
Yeah, I think international is always more difficult because you have to establish different baselines that you sort of already take for granted when you're working into the US. One is you have to have the legal ability to conduct business. You have to worry about, you know, who's in control of authorizing purchases, and you have to have a banking established in country. We do business in a lot of different countries. with data privacy laws changing so much around the world, some of the countries we do business with are having legislation come out that is, it's changing in front of our eyes. And so we actually became accustomed to certain strategies as a company that now we're having to revisit. You know, some of our offices are located in countries that have just passed new legislation that actually requires different treatment of data handling for privacy. And so we're having to revisit our strategy and revisit whether or not we continue doing what we're doing or whether we should do something different.
Sameet Bled, I am a group product manager over global and international for RingCentral. The fun of international is it changes. You know, in that time, we've had things like GDPR come out, which tends to change how you look at emerging markets and new markets and what it takes to do. So it's, as I tend to joke, it's one of the fun products that tries to unlaunch itself every single week, which makes life pretty interesting.
I asked Sameep what causes those changes at a global scale.
So, you know, if you take a look, and it really hasn't changed that much, you know, in the last 25 years, right? If you know, you're an IT admin, right? And you're responsible for your system, you say, okay, we're going to go into France, right? You know, we want to open a new expansion. You got to think about, okay, how many people, where is it going to be? I need to go and find a carrier that's going to provide me numbers and services. And, you know, so I got to go find them. I got to sign a contract. I got to look at different pricing. Am I in an urban site where I might have a lot of options? Am I in a rural site where I really just have one option? And I got to figure out what I need to buy, right? Is it internet? Is it numbers? Is it outbound calling? Is it inbound calling? Do we need mobile services? Are all those tied together, right? And then I got to work with those people, because if you're not in that market, if you're not in that country, you're not going to know all the restrictions, right? So you've got to work with them, and there may be language barriers and fun stuff like that. And, you know, they're assuming that you know a whole lot of information, whereas, you know, you're thinking, oh, I'm just going to call them up and order a circuit. And they say, well, no, you got to do all these steps. You have to have a registration or a filing and show me your business entity. And you go, well, we're not going to have that for another 2 weeks. So all of those steps, you know, it's not just do you meet all the requirements, is do you have all the documentation ready? I mean, I think one of the interesting things about being in this space and looking at how different countries look at something we're very used to is there's just an assumption that things work. And, you know, if you think about it, right, everyone thinks about copper line, right? It's just always there. Like in an emergency, what do? Find a landline. And as we move into a VoIP world, a mobile world, where all these things, people still have that association, that reliability on these services, right? They're still assuming that, hey, this is how I talk. This is how I communicate. They don't think about the 900 things that it takes to deliver that from one point to a different point, and making sure that, you know, you have all of the underpinnings that we expect. If you think of traditional telecommunications, everything's predicated on having a physical circuit in a single location. And as things have switched to IP, that's gotten more and more flexible. You know, cloud is very internet first, and internet circuit is a lot cheaper to get than, say, a traditional MPLS circuit or private network circuit that you used to have to do to have your old PBX. You know, you used to have to go and buy a PBX and configure it and then try to get it to talk to each other. Now, once I get access, because it's a single cloud system, you know, all my sites can talk to each other right away. There's not that additional step or that additional complexity or that worry that, oh, this person set it up one way and this person set it up one way and I got to do something magical to make it talk together. So, you know, the fun of voice compared to other SaaS products, right, is voice is considered a national asset, can be a security concern. You know, some countries look at the ability to get numbers can be used as, for terrorists or moving money. All of these things play into how concerned a given country is about how they're being used, who's using them, what it takes to get them. And so pretty much every country has what they call a KYC or know your customer. And you know, most SaaS companies have a certain level of it. And, you know, telecom in specific, like if you're talking about local numbers, it tends to be very, very restrictive, right? They want to know that there's someone in that country and who is that, because, you know, if that call, you know, makes a bomb threat, or if it calls 911 or it calls this or that, they need to know who that is. right? Europe has done a pretty good job of saying, okay, once you're in Europe, you can kind of expand to multiple places pretty easily. But like if you look at Asia Pac or Latin America, you know, as you're trying to do multiple sites at the same time, it can have completely varying requirements. Even some countries, if you're in some states versus a different state, you're going to have a completely different set of requirements. And a lot of times you need people in market, you need people who have done it before, you need people with experience. And so you really, a lot of it is working with partners. A lot of it's working with, you know, outside consultants and things like that, that can help you get the information back and try to scale up. And, you know, hopefully you have a team that's helping you, but if it's just you, it can be really, really painful because you're working all hours trying to meet people at the right times. You're talking to different providers because you may have different providers in different countries and in different locations.
Picture the ever-growing list of logistics and requirements and relationships blossoming like a fractal, growing more and more complex over time with each addition and branch that grows. Equipment purchasing, shipping, licensing, receiving, PTSN connections, call trees, fees, local requirements, regional requirements, national requirements, staffing, carriers, local numbers, connection with the larger organization. It's a lot to think about.
So my role at RingCentral is providing technical support for users in the UK office and the Paris office. So what I tend to do is provide technical support for anyone requiring any IT issues. It could be from hardware issue or software issue or issues with their laptops and they need support. And mainly onboard users when they start with the company.
Manny is the sole IT lead for RingCentral's UK and Paris offices. But that wasn't always the case. When he was hired, he was the sole support for just the UK office. And then he got a call one day.
So I heard about one year ago now, I think. We were told that we've acquired a company formerly known as DeMello, and we would need to support them and get them onto our platform and get them up and running as soon as possible. So myself and my colleague Jason were one of the first people to go out there to kind of show them what RingCentral platform was, show them about the product, get them onboarded onto our RingCentral phone, our RingCentral Glip.
RingCentral is a cloud-first company. We, as they say, drink the Kool-Aid.
That 1 week was a very intense week because we had to get everybody into the office. People were based all over Paris. At the time, the ones working remotely, we tried to book in a schedule for everyone to come in. Because I've never actually done like an office move globally. So the experience initially was a bit challenging, but I kind of rose to the occasion and ensured that all the resources I needed were in place.
Okay, let's pause here for a minute. In fact, let's rewind.
That 1 week was a very intense week because I've never actually done like an office move globally.
Manny is a hard worker. He's smart, proactive. He gets the job done. And when he was in charge of onboarding a recently acquired company in a new country, asked to get the entirety of a French-speaking team online as soon as possible, he completed about 85% in a week. A week! Now he supports two offices, still as the sole IT support.
I have to schedule time with them when it's suitable, remote onto the PC using our remote desktop tool. From there, I can take control of the screen. I can take control of applications on the laptop. If, for example, they require, I would say, for example, Google Chrome on their laptop and they don't have it because they might not have admin rights. With my admin rights tool, I can literally just install the software onto the laptop for them. If, for example, they're having problems with their meeting application, I can remote onto it and see what the problem is. If I need to reinstall a new software onto it, I can do that because I've got admin access to do that. If it's a random, obviously, cabling issue that I can't actually physically deal with, like from where I am, I would advise them what to do and speak to my colleague over in Paris, the R&D team. They're pretty much IT. They call them the IT guru. So they kind of know what to do and they can support me with that when needed. A couple of years ago, I'll say probably like 7 or 6 years ago, you wouldn't have been able to do that. But now with cloud solution coming up, you can do that, support people remotely. From my bedroom, I can probably support anyone with the tools that we have. So the whole experience for me has been a very amazing experience. And I would advise any company, if you're looking to move forward and succeed, cloud is the best. That cloud technology is the way forward.
Thank you for listening to RingCentral Connection. For more information on how to remove the complexity of expanding communications globally and working across borders, visit ringcentral.com/global. I'm Robert Murphy.
Connection is an original podcast from RingCentral and is available through iTunes or the podcast channel of your choice.